Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, everybody, let's hang tight and look for landing radar.
Flight guidance.
No guidance.
We'll need that landing radar by 18,000 with this soundtrack.
Roger.
On the pings.
Roger, I copy guidance. Okay, we got data back.
Radar flight looks good.
Roger.
2,000 feet.
Roger. 2,000 foot del H. I'm going around the horn. Make your go-no-goes based on the data you had prior to LOS. I see we got it back. Give you another few seconds.
We're going fine.
Okay, retro.
Go.
Fido.
Go.
Guide.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Telcom.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Ecom.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Capcom. We're go to continue PDI.
Coming to you live from the slopes of the ghost-filled Sierra Nevada gold country and in the paranormally active shadow of Mount Rainier, it's Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio with your hosts, John Almada and Kat Lang.
This darn thing won't play. We're having a fun technical issue tonight. I mean, one thing after another. So, hi, guys. Hello, Kat.
I was waiting for the music to start. I was like, wait a minute.
Here we go.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
Goes a weasel. Well, hey, everybody, it's another edition of Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio. Hey, we're calling in a little differently today because some different things have happened today. Number one, my uncle up in Montana had an embolism in his brain, and we just got the phone call while I was doing show notes today. So I'm having to leave our normal dial-in landline, which starts the show open for just in case we have any phone calls coming in from Montana where my other family is. So that's going on. And not only that, I had some upset parents and I was, went and got dinner and spent the, afternoon with them. So I did not get all the show notes done like I had intended to. I normally am very prompt about that. So my apologies, but we have enough. I was able to put something together to keep this going. And so tonight we're going to be talking about basically ghosts of Nevada. And I've got quite a bit of material here. And Kat has also been kind enough to do some research too. And I'll be leaning on her since we had a little bit of an event today, as I said. And still kind of collecting myself from all of that. So anyway, so hello, Kat.
Well, you just go ahead and just lean on me. It's that song, you know?
Yeah, so I did get the show music loaded up and did a bunch of the work last night before I went to bed, so we got a lot of it done out of the way, but it brought back a lot of memories of the last 2 years with my dad's seizures and strokes and things that have been going on. So my cousins up there had went in with their mother and took my uncle in and had to drive him to Plains with all of that happening. And boy, I know about those kinds of drives. It's just, by the time you get there, you're just an emotional wreck. And it really changes your perspective on things. When you're in the paranormal business like this, we deal so much with people who've died. When you're dealing with the living and who are in the process of saying goodbye, it's tough. I mean, it's tough on everybody. And, I'm just still kind of collecting the wind from my sails. So I'm sorry I'm kind of rambling here, but it's been a day. So that said, I just wanted to thank everybody for popping in. And I see we've got six folks on in the chat room. Oh, hi, Doc. I see out there, and there's Brian and everybody. So, and Des Moines Paranormal is there. Hi, guys. Good to see you. And so thank you all for coming in. Computer that normally does a lot of our edits. So there's a few links I'm going to just be working off of right off the computer. The way we're going tonight is I'll pass the links on later for the show page so you guys can look at it later. But I wasn't able to get those things to save for some reason. So it's been a day of just strangeness, you know. That said, let's talk a little bit about Virginia City. Kat, maybe you can jump in with some of your stuff that you found, and I'm just going to be looking over some notes here while you do that. So if you could...
talking about the haunted Gold Hill Hotel, this is actually where the gold strike started. This would be prior to the largest of gold and silver strikes. This was ground zero, if you call it, right where the Gold Hill Hotel is. It's the gold and silver strike actually was called the Comstock Lode, and it actually occurred in Virginia City. And the two mines that are still here are called the Yellow Jacket and the Commons. And a lot of miners back then, interesting to compare between now and then, a lot of the miners were killed in the mines due to accidents. Of course, a lot more were killed back then than are now, but, you know, it's always sad to hear about people, you know, down in these mine shafts. Of course, the safety measures now are a lot more sophisticated, though they're still rather primitive in my eyes as far as mining goes, but they did lose a few due to accidents. And if you go down to the Gold Hill Hotel and Saloon, as you know, right behind the building is the Yellow Jacket Mine. And
yeah,
the interesting thing about the Yellow Jacket Mine is that they didn't have electricity. They did the mining by candlelight. And down in these mine shafts, oxygen is limited. And
they had a lot of problems.
Yeah, the candlelight combined with the natural ore gases coming out created quite an explosive situation. The largest accident, one of the largest, occurred in 1873. 37 miners were killed and were actually left buried at the bottom of the mine shafts. And they are still there.
Yeah.
They never recovered these bodies.
And that's actually at the entrance where the existing room is. So you can actually rent the room leading in, I think, to the Yellow Jacket right there. There's a room that they built in at the shaft entrance that you can actually stay in. And people like Mark and Debbie Constantino stayed there and got some really amazing EVPs. So, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, good.
They have reported everything in this hotel from faces in the mirrors in the rooms that people have photographed or attempted to photograph. There's a lot of chatter that goes on, a lot of phantom conversations, if you will, between miners and ladies and just general chit-chat is reported. Footsteps up and down the hallways. And, of course, as you know, there's also the beds that shake.
Yeah, I stayed in, I believe it was room 6 there in 2006.
Mm.
And out on the GRI website, there's a section in the gallery folder where it's if you scroll down, you'll see the photos from our 2006 motorcycle trip that I do chase support with the GRI Mustang, also doubles as chase support vehicle. And so we did a full tour of Yellowstone and all kinds of places and ended up at the Gold Hill on the return leg home and stayed there for an evening. And it was just an amazing place. It was actually my very first paranormal investigation. I knew I wanted to get into this, and I had no idea what I was really doing. did take I took quite a few shots there. So there's pictures, from that expedition that are there. EVPs I tried, but I really didn't know what I was doing, and I've lost track of those actual EVP recordings I did, and probably got some stuff, but I really didn't know how to analyze things back then. I didn't have the tool sets like I have now. But what I can tell you is I wandered all through the area and up above the actual mine. You can actually walk up and behind on a big trail, and there's all these vintage railroad cars and things that are behind there that you walk along and you feel like you're being watched out there. It's just this, it's very eerie. And I was really surprised when I had spent the whole evening there, and then when we went out in the morning, I was just packing the car. I saw people come out of the mine shaft, and I went, "What are you doing in there?" And that's when we found out about the room. And I always made a resolution that I'd be going back. And so this year we're going to go in. We're going to go back, and GRI is going to go in with hopefully several investigators, and we'll do try to get. I think it's rooms 4 and 5. Is that right on the notes? 4 and 5 in
yeah.
The hotel. There's two spirits there that live there. And then in the actual miner's room, miner's cabin, there at the gold, at the shaft entrance, I've got an EVP link that says on the main page that you can see it says 25, and that's an MP3 file, and you can actually listen to they ask how many spirits are there, and they think it says 25 was the response that came back on the EVP. And
right.
I tried to locate a few more, but could not find anything else. But actually, no, come to think of it, there are more. I put Mark and Debbie Constantino's link to their page from the Ghost Adventures crew. Went in there with them, and I believe they have quite a few there. So you can go in there and listen and look at some of that. And it's pretty amazing. The whole town has just an odd feel to it. If you've ever been through that part of the world, Boot Hill, and what was some of the places, the Washoe Club, I'm kind of just interrupting you, but there's just, as you walk down the street, especially if you're sensitive, you just get these feelings, and it's unlike, I'm used to this place here where I live being pretty haunted, but that place I think there was even more death than here. Just like you were saying, Kat, there's just a lot of accidents there, and safety was not the number one concern. As a matter of fact,
they're still there.
They valued the life of a donkey more than they valued the life of a man. So it was because the donkey hauled more stuff. So it was you could kind of see where things were coming from there. I don't know about gunfights and things like that in the streets, but I think mining was probably the number one cause of death there.
Oh, it sounds like it to me from reading about it, especially, using candlelight to light up these mines combined with the gas. I mean, it's explosive. They didn't have oxygen masks, and they didn't have the carts like we have. They drive right into the mine. They didn't have that stuff.
Yeah, it's... I'm looking forward to going there and, seeing what we can do. Especially at the miner's cabin. I'd like to stay in there and have another crew member there to, basically just, go the whole night and see what we get. The one thing I would like to do is and I've talked about this before, especially with EVPs, when you're really out trying to get spirits to talk with you. There's actually, I'm not the kind that goes around provoking. I've said that before on many shows. For various reasons, I've just learned it works better to be nice to them. So Mark and Debbie Constantino kind of passed along an interesting tip when I was on our investigation out at in Modesto, out at the Wolf Manor back in November. And what they said was that if you take gifts to these spirits, things that they would like, and you ask them what they want on an EVP, you'll get some pretty interesting responses. So what she had done was she went out there to the Gold Hill and asked, "What do you guys want?" And all these miners went, whiskey. And so she went, okay. And she went out, right on out, and that day she went off and she bought a big bottle of Crown Royal and brought it to him and opened up and poured him a few rounds. And, you know, she just, they just loved it, and they responded, and they were just happy as clams. And so what ended up happening was she was talking about that, and we said, well, what happened afterwards? And she says, oh, that's the best part. And what it was is other investigators who come in afterwards and stay there at the Gold Hill have these miners are all talking about Debbie and all the nice stuff Debbie does for them. And they had no way of knowing. You know, they finally, you know, put two and two together that Debbie had been there, Debbie Constantino had been there along with Mark, and asked about this, and you know, come to light that they've been giving these gifts out. So I actually incorporated that into here on the property here this last Christmas and Thanksgiving.
Right.
The local spirits here. I went and bought a bottle of Crown Royal and did the same damn thing, and took some of the same drink over to the Shingle String Cemetery and gave it to those guys there, and it was righteous funny. the comments I got back were, you know, this guy's a saint, he's an angel. And, you know, so I'm not going to advocate taking drinks out to and leaving them out there per se. You know, show some common sense, but you know, take time to ask what these guys want. You know, spirits, they love being paid attention to. I think that's the number one thing. And if you're nice to them and include them in things and develop the relationships like we always talk about on this show, I think it's
right.
Something very important, you know.
Uh-huh.
But that said, what about some of the other places you've got, Kat?
You know, I think that... One of the most interesting places that I've done any research on is actually the Washoe Club. The Washoe Club is actually being refurbished, and if you ever get a chance to head out to Virginia City, Nevada, donations are gladly accepted at this wonderful establishment that they're trying to rekindle a little. It's fallen apart, and the owner is, just like the rest of us, kind of struggling along with funds to redo this place. So if you get to thinking about it, you can you can Google it to the Washoe, Washoe Club, and there's a nice site there, and you can get in touch with him and maybe get him some funds. But the Washoe Club is also called the Millionaires Club. And if you ever have ever been to the Washoe Club, the thing that you'll notice is a spiral staircase that goes up. And it was the club originally called the Millionaires Club. It was built so that the nouveau rich, which is the new rich, the new money gentlemen, might enjoy the pleasures of wealth in comfort and style. And interestingly enough, the Washoe or Millionaires Club at one time was used to store corpses when the ground was frozen too solid for digging graves.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it sounds like it was used for a morgue-type situation because, well, they didn't have backhoes back then, so they were digging these graves with shovels, and in the wintertime... when it freezes, well, I guess they couldn't dig, so they had to put the bodies somewhere, and they were at the Millionaires Club.
So there's a lot of activity, I take it, reported at that location?
They have three ghosts that haunt the old Washoe Club. There's a lovely blonde apparition known as the Lady in Blue. There's also the specter of a scared little girl, which is kind of sad. And then there's a prospector, who occasionally cages drinks from unsuspecting patrons. And they're in the women's bathroom, the door to the room locks and unlocks by itself. So I can see doing your business and the door suddenly unlocks. But take warning, it sounds like there's a little bit of fun going on down here at the old Washoe Club. But in the Washoe Club itself, there's actually two different sites of the old Washoe Club. meaning there are two different parts to it. There's the bar and the snack bar downstairs, and then you go up the winding staircase, and this is kind of upstairs. I am taking it where the brothel was. Upstairs is a world of gambling, cigars, liquor, and prostitutes. The Washoe or Millionaires Club has one secret entrance and two secret exits. So the millionaires, the newly made millionaires of the time, could sneak in and out of this club undetected if they didn't want to be, you know, seen going in and out of this gentleman's club.
That seems to be a common theme. Placerville has our very own instance of that. We have an actual club or mine entrance. Quote, it was quote a mine, but really what it amounted to was there was an entrance off Main Street that all the men would walk through, and about a quarter mile at the end of the tunnel that emerged on the other side of this mountain right there at Placerville was a house of ill repute. And it's actually still in existence, but they filled in the mine. They've like locked the whole thing down, and I guess they've boxed up that site so you can't get in and out. But it would sure be interesting to get in there and see what you pick up in that private residence. So we may actually try to get there and do that. But anyway, I'm interrupting. Go keep going there, Kat.
Oh no, you're not interrupting. It's Virginia City is a very, very interesting place because it's. I think one of the reasons is because they had so many mining deaths, and they had, you know, the Millionaires Club, and they had the prostitutes, and it was in the cities in the Old West, in the old gold rush days, you had the little bit more sophisticated, well-built cities, and then you had the little ones that were kind of dotted the scenery of just like these some of the little towns out there. They were just built for the gold rush. Then as soon as the gold rush was over, everybody left and the towns kind of fell apart. Whereas you have places like Virginia City and Placerville, where these old buildings not only still stand, but they're also lived in and maintained. And I think it's really important that we support these old gold rush towns because they have a lot to say. This is part of our history.
We're going through it right now. With the what's funny is we're really trying hard just here in Placerville with the economy the way it is. We're watching businesses fold up right and left, and it's kind of getting to the point where I'm getting really concerned what I'm seeing happen. And we're just hoping that what the city does is realizes what a treasure it has in these buildings and doesn't. Does take minimal steps to keep them, at least viable. The ones that, whatever happens, are abandoned or just left empty. Some minimal expenses are taken to maintain them until things come back, which, they will. But, my God, there's just so much there. That whole section of Placerville is just filled with history. And the same thing with Virginia City. So the Washoe Club, I'm not surprised. I'll tell you, I will say this. I'm going to take the Washoe Club information that you had there and put that on the public announcements area on the GRI site so that we have that as the public service links. Because we keep running into this over and over again. There's all these really, really interesting paranormal spots that are just cash-strapped to beat heck and really need help. And anything we can do to help them, that's just what we're here to do. And we hope that kind of a challenge I'm just going to throw out there to other folks listening who have their own paranormal sites, grab that stuff and start throwing it out there too. The more folks that know, if you give them $5-$10, whichever one of these folks you want to help, it's $5 and $10 they didn't have before, So just letting you know that it's kind of serious out there, and I'm sure there's even a few spirits who might actually drop by to say thank you for that, and your EVPs or whatever. So,
one of the most interesting facts that I actually found about Virginia City is the fact that back in the Gold Rush days, back prior to 1864, there was a huge, huge cache of silver and gold that was found. There was also a huge cache of ore. when they would dig, it would come up as a sludge almost, and they didn't realize the content of it, but it actually reached the ears of President Abraham Lincoln, who needed this cache of gold, silver, and ore to continue with the Civil War. And so actually on Halloween of 1864, Abe Lincoln declared Nevada a state, even though it didn't have enough residents to become a statehood. He actually deemed it a state, and that was on Halloween. So
I had no idea of that. That's amazing.
That's true. That's
so
right.
Abe kicked it in gear and started the whole Sin City concept and everything.
Abe said, yo, I need this stuff, man.
Yo, I need the dough.
Yo.
Hey, I just wanted to say, too, we got Sal is here. Hi, Sal. So we just want to let you know we see you out there. And Doc John is asking, what's the elevation of the Washoe Club? And I think that's high desert. So you're looking at probably on the order of 4,000 to 5,000 feet elevation would be probably about right. Because that comes up off the valley floor. When you drive into Virginia City, it's actually up on a mountain. So you come, if you were coming from Sacramento and you dip down from Lake Tahoe, you end up on a valley floor just on the other side. And then you end up following about, I guess, 20, 30 miles, and you start back uphill. So I would say at least 4,000 to 5,000 feet would be a good elevation estimate. So it's definitely mountainous, and when you drive out, if you go just continue through town, if you were to come from Lake Tahoe and you head towards Reno, you're on a switchback, and you're driving just through this really beautiful mountain country. So not only is it just an amazing historic place, but it's a great drive, and especially if you have motorcycles or you just like driving, some really challenging roads, they got them. Trust me, and it's just a neat place to visit. So, hey, we're coming up on the half hour break, Ms. Kat. So I'm going to grab, I've got something, I hope you animal lovers there understand this song that I'm about to play. It's meant only in jest, but it's from the 60s before things were, quote, PC, political correct, okay? So we're going to go ahead and play this, and maybe you'll laugh, and maybe you'll decide to burn me at the stake for it, but whatever you do, you'll remember this, all right? So here we go.
Suffering is here. Life is skittles and life is beer. I think the loveliest time of the year is the spring. I do. Don't you? Of course you do. But there's one thing that makes spring complete for me and makes every Sunday a treat for me. All the world in tune on a spring afternoon when we're poisoning pigeons in the park.
Oh, no!
Every Sunday you'll see my sweetheart and me as we poison the pigeons in the park.
John!
When they see us coming, the birdies all try and hide, but they still go for peanuts when coated with a cyanide.
Oh my God.
The sun is shining bright. Everything seems all right when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. We've gained notoriety and caused much anxiety in the Audubon Society with our games. They call it impiety and lack of propriety and quite a variety of unpleasant names. But it's not against any religion to want to dispose of a pigeon. So if Sunday you're free, why don't you come with me and we'll poison the pigeons in the park. And maybe we'll do in a squirrel or two while we're poisoning pigeons in the park. We'll murder them all amid laughter and merriment, except for the few we take home to experiment. My pulse will be quickening with each drop of strychnine we feed to a pigeon. It just takes a smidgen to poison a pigeon in the park.
Professor Tom Lehrer. Yes, he's a classic, and I'm so sorry for those of you who love pigeons, but I just couldn't resist, and I, what can I say? Hello, Kat.
Hello.
What'd you think? You like that? Is that,
you know,
like a classic,
I think,
or
that
what?
Poisoning pigeons in the park is probably a classic.
Yep, it was. I first heard that when Dr. Demento, for those of you who are old enough to remember that famous show from the 1970s on, he actually had a program that was based out of L.A., and then he ended up at my grandfather's radio station at KSAN, and was out there for a while, and I guess he's bumped all over the place, and now he's got his own website and doing all kinds of interesting things. So if you happen to get a chance, go look up Dr. Demento, and he's got some interesting songs, including, we'll have another one that we play later on in the show, which I think you'll remember, had to do with a certain amount of insanity, but anyway, we'll keep on going there. Anyway, I'm looking at a website here, and by the way, I see my good friends from CJAVP. If that's Christine, I just wanted to say we miss you, kid. So we just wanted you to know, we hope to see your show on real soon. So
that's right.
If we see her out there, we're going to be definitely making time to. I think she moved to, where was it?
Canada.
British Columbia, yeah, from Texas. So that's quite a culture shift, and you know, we hope that everything's going good for her. And I know she was like a, I think it was her daughter had a baby, and I'm not sure, boy or girl, but I'm sure it's congratulations are in order. So for that, yep. Rob from Knoxville says, Dr. Demento classic. You got it, my friend. And we've got some more of that coming in for the next half-hour break. So just wait and see. I think you'll like it. Anyway, so we're looking at where were we at? We were talking about the Washoe Club and some of the economic issues and things going on. And what else in your repertoire did you have going on?
I think that one of the most – well, it's all fascinating out that way, but we also have the Boot Hill Cemetery and Graveyard.
Yeah,
which,
I've been there.
Have you really?
Oh, yeah. We were there in 2006 when I did that. When we stayed at the Golden Hill Hotel, I went there, and it was quite a place. And, you know, I'm not the most accurate psychic in the world, but I tend to feel things more than anything. I can tell when something's not right, and I took a few steps into that place, and you felt like, boy, you were being watched, and some of the stuff in there was not the nicest. And then the Ghost Adventures crew, I saw their show where they went in there, and they went up there and picked a fight with the guy who's interred up at the top of the hill. And I think if you've seen the show, they were running for their lives. It seems like Nevada's got a thing with the Ghost Adventures crew chasing them out. It seems to be the trick, but that is an interesting cemetery. So
he freaked out because he thought something touched his shoulder.
Yeah.
And that could have been anything.
Well, he said something grabbed him, you know, from what I remember.
Well.
It actually grabbed him or slammed him, and so he, you know, wasn't expecting it. I don't know, you know. I've been touched and had stuff thrown at me and things like that. I don't know about you. I'm sure you've had your share of physical effects and things tossed your way.
Oh, you saw one of them.
Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah, that when you fell. I remember that. Oh, yeah.
My finger still hurts.
Yeah, it was funny. She showed up at the property, and we were just getting out of the car. We'd been out for the day in I believe it was your Mustang, and went to go into our house, and all of a sudden she got shoved from behind, and I tried to catch you and couldn't. There was just not enough time, and you ended up, I thought you hit your head on the wall, and I thought, oh, no, we're going to be calling an ambulance, and never had seen that before on the property, so yeah. Yeah, we've had our definite share of that. Anyway, continue on with the Boot Hill. Let's go along with that.
Boot Hill was founded in 1878, and the reason why they call it Boot Hill is because a lot of those graves are filled with people that died. They actually died very suddenly and very violently, and they buried them with their boots on. So they call it Boot Hill. There are 250 known people that are buried in Boot Hill before it officially closed its doors in 1884. So that's an official count. That's not the count.
That's the thing that we find at a lot of these 1800 series, cemeteries, pioneer cemetery type things. There's way more people than were ever on the official docket because people were actually going in and not telling anybody and just planting their relatives there. Just because, and it was just sort of the way that things got done. So I would bet you anything there's probably at least half to, three times as many more folks in there than you really would, that are on the official list. And we see that a lot out here. We went to Fairplay, you and I went to Fairplay when you were last out here in that cemetery there, and you know there's way more in there than what's really, quote, official. So,
well, this, and of course, the cemetery itself fell into disrepair, and some of the old wooden markers, my friend Haunted Hunters is saying, there's some old wooden ones out there. They actually, some of these grave markers are 1 to 2 feet off to the left or to the right. They didn't really keep that close track as to where you were actually buried. And as you know, John, out in the gold mining territories, people were buried right where they dropped. So as far as how many are really out there, anybody's guess.
Yeah, we've got 3 or 4 here buried on our property right out, that woman that you and I have talked about many times, and then we've got...
Yep.
Several other miners here, and I've even got an interesting EVP that from December of last year. I'll have to find that where Spirit basically says, "Hey, I'm down here." Mm-hmm. So we're out in our garden area. We're walking right over this guy. I'm like, "Oh boy, I wish I'd remember where I was when that was said. I could get the exact spot." But one thing that, though, and I'm going to ask you if you've ever had this basic thought about EVPs and that kind of thing. I know you talk to them more directly than I do.
Uh-huh.
But for folks that are, more dependent on, recorders to get their, their communications, I've run into so many cases of these cemeteries where you walk in and just like you said, where the markers are just wiped out. They've either been vandalized or they're just worn down. There's no way to know who the person was, and you go to look up the records, and there's just nothing to indicate who that person is. And I've been trying experiments to see, can I get their names? And some success with that, and I think that's the thing is what do you do with that information once you get it? I'm kind of at a point now where, I've got so many investigations running and things, it's not something I could do full-time. It's just not realistic, but at the same time, I'm going to try down the road to do something about that, to try to communicate information about that. But how do you walk up to somebody who's probably going to be a skeptic and go, by the way, I know who's in that grave. Well, they'll say, well, how did you know that? Well, they told me.
Well, actually, over here at the Boot Hill Cemetery, the cemetery itself has been extensively researched. And a lot of the older grave markers have been replaced, and they've been remarked as close to the original location as they could get. But they use city records and charts. We went to that one graveyard, and I said that who was it? Was it Josh is buried right here, and then we got that EVP.
Yeah, Fairplay Cemetery?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We got, that one guy, I've been there several times, and there's one guy, every time I open the gate and go in, I have the EVP recorder on. This guy says, hi, and tells me his name. So some of them are just really friendly when you go in there, and then others are just cantankerous is all you get up. Anyway, keep going. Sorry, I'm just going off here.
Oh, no, it's just along the lines of what you're talking about. If you could walk through some of these older cemeteries and get a first and a last name, the last name would be important. You could research that. I don't know if some of the cemeteries out by you actually have a large quantity of people that were just thrown in there and buried, although I don't doubt that there are some. The other problem that we had back in the mid to early to late 1800s is a lot of people didn't carry identification on them like we carry driver's licenses. So what would happen is if they found somebody dead and they weren't identified by anybody, it was customary for the undertaker to display the dead individual on a cooling slab in his parlor window so the townspeople passing by could try to identify. And a lot of people were only identified by their nickname. So if your real name was Troy Lansbury, but people called you Slim, then people would say, well, that's Slim. Okay, well, that's the name that they had for you. So that's what they buried you as. So unfortunately, a lot of these people from the late to early 1800s that were buried nameless, it's not out of disrespect. It's out of the fact that nobody knew who they were. You had a lot of people that drifted from town to town. You had a lot of gunfights. You had somebody that could die 500 miles away from where they originally were, and nobody in that town's going to know them. And you can only keep somebody on a cold slab of ice for so many days before, well, you kind of have to bury them. So at least they did their part in trying to find out who this individual was to give them a proper burial. Now, granted, a lot of people out there in Boot Hill were rabble-rousers, and they were hung, and quite frankly, nobody cared who they were. They just threw them in the ground. So those are some of the people that you would have the most problems with in a graveyard because they're just disgruntled, period. And they hear people walking around pointing, oh, there's Myrtle, there's, you know, Doc James, there's so-and-so, but they don't have a name, and they're probably standing there going, what about me?
Well, it's funny, it was late December, and I had, our team went out to the Pioneer Cemetery out in Coloma, which is a really pretty famous place. It's, there's some, just exceptional EVPs we've gotten out there, which I played, quite a few of them on the show. But there's a little known section. Michelle, our researcher, she was really hot on this, checking this one section out where three guys were hanged over in Placerville and brought down. And what ended up happening was they decided that they weren't going to bury them with the rest of the people in the cemetery. They were buried outside the cemetery lines as a sign of disrespect. And so we actually climbed over the fence and went down looking, and I actually found the stones and took photographs of them, and I had EVPs running. And these guys were telling me off the whole time. I mean, it was just a matter than heck that we were even out there. So it's not always the case, to quote, that they're I think, jealous of those on the other side, per se, that are buried in, quote, hallowed ground. I just think sometimes they're just a bunch of mean, really mean people and have just a basic attitude. But I could see where you're coming from the Boot Hill thing, although I don't think that they really distinguish between who was good or who was bad. They just tossed them all in the same pot there. From what I could tell, it just didn't seem to matter. But here in Placerville, it seemed to be different. They had a little bit of a standard or something. And
out here by Boot Hill is where a lot of iron ore is and a lot of minerals. And those minerals actually carry a lot of energy with them.
Yeah,
so,
I've heard that before. And the quartz veins and everything, yeah, it just seems to really carry the energy. So, yeah, that would make sense, especially up that high up in the Sierras.
So the magnification of a disgruntled individual who maybe was hung for stealing or got shot in a gunfight, and they've just kind of, I get the funny feeling that a lot of these people aren't actually buried in a coffin either. The energy that they could manifest off of the minerals in the earth would be, sometimes I believe that would be quite frightening. The energy levels they could produce.
That's the thing that I'd like to go back now that we know quite a bit more. It would be good to spend about maybe 2 to 3 days, especially midweek, where you just don't have a lot of other people around, and go around and really get to know the place and do some day investigations of, Boot Hill, maybe even to the evening a little bit if we could possibly do it. But they tend to lock those places up. That's my experience with cemeteries. They sundown, they tend to run everybody out. Although it would be fun to leave some drop recorders in and just, go back and get them the next day and see what you get.
Well, if you go up there for 2 or 3 days, we could go up there for, like 3 days. First thing I would do is get to know the groundskeepers or whatever and just explain who I am. And, hey, perhaps, they'd let us in there for a little while longer. As long as safety is an issue now, I can get back in contact with Ike and see what he's got and see if he can help us out. I can shoot him an email.
Well, I'm looking at probably towards the end of May to pull this one off, and then Shanley is definitely out there in July.
Right.
So, so we got that, and I know Sal's out there. Hi, Sal. So,
hi, Sal.
Yep. So we're all set for that, and I'm really looking forward to getting that portable broadcast studio so I can throw it on an airplane with me and the laptop, and off we go. So we can do those shows like we were talking about yesterday. But what about that guy that's at the top of the there? I don't remember the name of this gentleman, but at the very top of Boot Hill there, there's like a prominent citizen there, and evidently he also had a bit of an attitude. And I remember that from Ghost Adventures, but because I would have done my research today, unfortunately, I had that family situation arise, so I'm kind of depending on you right now. Although I've got some of the sites up here, but I don't have the Boot Hill notes. So, do you have anything on that, Kat?
I am actually on the Boot Hill Graveyard site, and interesting people that are buried at Boot Hill would be Frank Bowles, who was born on August 5th of 1828, died August 26th of 1880. And on his tombstone, it says, "As you pass by, remember that as you are so once was I, and as I am you, soon will be, remember me."
Oh,
now, the famous Lester Moore marker is out there, and his tombstone reads, "Here lies Lester Moore, 4 slugs from a .44, no less, no more." Like Lester, Lester Moore.
That's like the, there's actually a book that I think you guys might enjoy, and I can't remember the name of it, but it has to do with famous epitaphs and numerous ones. And the one that I can recall is, "Here lies the body of Jonathan Blake, stepped on the gas instead of the brake." And so if you could find, somebody took the time to go out to all these graveyards and find these and compile it into a book and then take, I think they took photographs of them. So if you happen to go out, I think on Amazon, try to see if you could find that. I'll make a note to go look for that and then pop that on for, maybe bring it up on the next show next Saturday. I've got to write this down right now, but low less, no more, that's pretty good. I like
that's
that.
That's right.
Yeah.
This little clip that I have here about the Boot Hill Cemetery, we can actually put this up on the GRI site, this site that I'm on right now. It's just fascinating to me because it's got not only the names of the, and there's actually a picture here of the Boot Hill Cemetery in a snowstorm, which is quite rare.
Hey, before you go on, Lerner gave us another one. It says, he says, oh God, what about this one? I told you I was sick.
Oh, hell.
That's good. I like that. I'm sure it's like a wife telling her husband, I told you. Would you listen to me?
Well, that's like the famous redneck saying, watch this. Famous last word.
Oh, no. That's great.
You know, the interesting thing about cemeteries, like I was saying, like this, is it has a whole list of names of people that are buried there. So if you printed this list out and walked around the Boot Hill Cemetery with a recorder and called some of these names out, I wonder how many of them would respond to you.
I think we've talked about some of that in the past, and I do think that if you did that, you are going to get those kinds of responses. And I think that has to do a lot with the what's the name of that principle that I'm trying to think of the name. If I could get
what's it called, the Thailand theory or something?
Yeah, it's Singapore theory.
Singapore theory. There
and
you go.
Matter of fact, last night, I mean, after we did the show, I got to thinking about that, and I went and looked, and I found a website that had a lot of 1800s music. And what I decided to do, and partially for this show, just getting ready for it. And the other thing was, I thought I'm going to carry an MP3 player with speakers with me, as part of the standard issue kit in the back of the car. And when we go out to some of these places, just remember to do this: is actually pull that out and play some of these songs that would have been known from the early 1800s on. And see what kind of responses we get, because having seen it on TAPS and some of the Ghost Hunters International crews that Barry, especially Barry, he's big on this. They did get some interesting responses, and I think that that goes along the same lines. Get the list of people and take it with you, and then start calling those names out and see what you get.
They have, another thing that I've always been curious about. You'll tell me that I'm crazy, but do you think that you would solicit more of a response from these individuals if you dressed up in period clothing and walked around in clothing of the day rather than jeans and a t-shirt?
Well, I tend to think it goes along the same lines. If you're playing their music, if you're talking, if you try to talk in terms that they would have known, if anything you can do to bring about more of them identifying with you or realizing that you've taken the time to get to know them, I tend to think that would be right on the money. Yeah, especially with people. There's so often we have out here in this part of the world, we have so many of those Western celebrations where that kind of thing does happen. And it would be interesting to try to maybe have somebody who's in a celebration like that work with you. I'm not sure I'm going to be walking around in a cowboy suit anytime soon, though, in a pioneer cemetery. But, hey, we got a question I saw out there. Rob from Knoxville, by the way. He has, I have an EVP question. I have been using my iPod with a Belkin recorder without external mic, and it works great. But when I add the separate mic, I get nothing. So I'm assuming, I guess there's like an add-on recorder that you're using, I'm not, quote, a total expert on EVP with regard to all the different equipment that's out there, but what I found, and this just, you can disagree with me, but what I found is the Sony ICDs and some of the lesser Olympus players and recorders tend to be a little more able to pick things up. It seems like this, the simpler the technology, the better that you do seem to get some of these EVPs in. And I think Christine is out there. If she's out there, she could probably add on to what I'm talking about. If I'm totally wrong, Christine, feel free to correct me. But my experience has been I'm using the ICD P610 or P620 and a P520. Those are my standard standard equipment for the field, and I do great with them. I've never tried an external mic, so you just give me something to actually, as an experiment, try that the next time I'm out and see what happens.
We have John from Des Moines Paranormal is calling in, is what Doc's telling us.
Okay, let's go ahead and pop him in. I see that. So let's...
Cool.
Okay. If I can just get this control board to do its thing. You know, I hear Christine's complaining about the same thing every so often. Oh, there he is. Finally it pops in. Hello.
Hello. It's
hi, John.
It's Mike,
hi, John.
Actually. John's my buddy.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Hey, I got one
board,
for
Mike.
You. Yeah, you'll get a kick out of this. Actually, I've got a relative that actually I just found out that was actually killed in Boot Hill. Actually, you might have the name. This will probably kill you. His name is James Sheriff. He was a stagecoach driver for Wells Fargo. He was out of Montana. He was doing the route from there to Boot Hill and was shot in Boot Hill.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and
so,
here's the
cool. Oh, keep going.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Well, here's the cool thing. You will get such a kick out of this. All right.
Okay.
Now, I don't know who the mortician was at the time. Wells Fargo came to this guy and told him. He said, "Well, the family just sent the money back that we sent them. Okay, they want their son back. How are we going to get this guy back from a 3 month? It's going to take him 3 months to get there, right?
Right.
Right.
So, guess what they did to him."
What?
Just take a long game.
They didn't mail in FedEx, did they?
No.
No well, FedEx. Okay.
No, but close.
What did they do? Did they chop his legs off and then bundle him in a? Did they like try to make him smaller to make it like an easier trip back?
Well, here's what they did. This is what kills us. We actually went through the family records and found out the information. What they did is the mortician back at that time period, what he did is he took this gentleman, right, got him a big old whiskey barrel, shoved the guy down in there, poured scotch whiskey over the top of him, put on the cask itself, do not drink, ever, human body.
Oh, my God, they tickled the poor guy.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
No.
And what they did is they brought him all the way back here to Iowa, okay, all right, buried him in the cask. These guys didn't open it up. They buried him in what they brought him home in.
Wow, what a way
and
to
so
go. I mean, we talk about, you know, the ultimate burial crypt. I mean, yeah, you're going to be high for eternity, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
No,
yeah.
Well, here's the
so
thing.
He's still there like that.
Yeah, well, they took ground penetrating radar, right? Went up there in the cemetery, and a friend of mine brought it up. He works for the state and everything. He goes, "Well, let's see what this guy looks like in here." So what they did is they did ground-penetrating radar, still buried, head down. They didn't put him head up. They put him head down. So he's buried on his head.
Oh, no.
and he's still in the cask. It's still all together. Hasn't rotted or anything. Still together. And you can see in the picture, you can see his boots, what's left of his hat. He was not buried with his gun. They actually sent that back, and they put it in the headstone. Now, in the headstone, we unlocked it, looked in there. His gun and his knife were gone.
Aww.
Somebody had stolen it. So
what?
When we go out to the cemetery, he's pissed. All right? He already knows that I'm there. He knows I'm family. You know, it's not a big deal to him. But he'll follow you around, all the way around that cemetery. And we get pictures of mists and everything else. So I actually told Doc John this story, when I was out there, too. They call him the Pickle Cowboy. And because
now, so he's not buried at Boot Hill, because I do not see his name.
No, he was interned in Boot Hill for a week. The family got the telegram, and they turned right back around, sent everything back, and told him to bring his butt home. So they buried him and then they dug him back up.
And so he's in Missouri, is it?
Iowa. He is in Iowa.
Okay.
His name is James Sheriff.
James Sheriff.
I'm going to write that name down.
We got to look this one up.
I've heard of this case, oddly enough. Yeah. And the cool thing about it is that the whole family, the sheriff family, knows this story. And I actually asked them. You know, because they're technically only by marriage that I'm, you know, with these guys. But I actually asked them, and they said, yeah, this is a story that has been told since the day he died.
And so when you went out there and you actually did EVPs and that kind of thing and got some responses from him.
Yeah, actually, we got the sound of, Grant and I both went out there. Just the two of us usually go out there because I'm the only one. Me and him were the only ones that got real permission to be out there late at night and everything. We go out there. His recorder, I pick up two dry fires in mine, and he gets two shotgun blasts in his.
Whoa.
And then we also get a woman saying, "Move out of the way." We get him saying, I'll learn you." We get a couple other ones saying, "Be careful, watch out," you know. And so we get that all the time there at that place. And it is it's actually on the historic registry too.
Wow.
So.
Well, if you ever feel like sharing those, let us
know. How you spelling that?
The sheriff, the last name sheriff.
How you spelling that?
It's S-H-E-R-I-F-F, I believe. Let me double.
Okay, Doc was asking how you're spelling that, so.
Yeah. You want me to re-spell it again?
Sure.
Okay, it's S as in Sam, H as in hotel, E, wait a minute, S-H-A-R-I-F-F, I believe, is how it's spelled.
Okay, so it's not the normal sheriff, which has an E.
Right.
It's sheriff.
Right, right. Right. It's a Scotch name. Because his folks were from northern part of Scotland when they moved here.
Ooh, Scottish John.
Probably knew some of my family from the McGregor clan.
Probably. I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. He was actually kicked out of his home at the age of 14. He started working for Wells Fargo, and if I got this history right on this, we looked him up. We found out he started working for Wells Fargo as a baggage handler for this coach when he was 15 years old. And then once he was in there for maybe a year or so, and he became a driver. And he drove
this guy was,
I'm sorry.
He was like a teenager when he died then?
Yeah, he was only 22 years old when he died.
Good God.
And
poor guy,
the story is that it was one of the boys from the James gang that got pissed off at him and killed him.
Oh, really?
Yep. So that's the story that we know of. Yeah. I mean, it was just like one day he walked into town. I guess he must have said something to somebody, and I guess they popped a cap in him, you know. That's all we know.
Wow. So, and you, how often do you go back to, you know, basically, you're like the only family then keeping tabs of him right now then, you know, EVP-wise. So what does he have to say about things?
Well, I've asked him a few questions, and he usually pretty much answers back pretty quick. I mean, you know, usually you get the 12-second, you know, hang on kind of thing and wait for him to say anything. He's like within a second. I'll say, "How you feeling?" He's like, "Good." You know? And I'll say, "Are you mad that we're here?" "No." he's pretty quick about everything. He doesn't even have an accent, which is great. You know, he was born in Scotland, but he lived here in the States. He doesn't have an accent at all.
Can you catch him on video? Have you ever photographed him?
We've tried to catch him on video. We're going to go back out, I think, not this Saturday, but we're going to go out next Saturday. We're going to set up all of our infrared cameras. We're going to set that up. We're going to see if we can get him coming out of there. But
you ever thought about leaving him some scotch?
You know what? We've actually gone in period clothing.
Leave him some scotch.
Yeah. Take him out or a little bit of whiskey and say, "Hey, this is you know, we're toasting you and you know, you guys take it just a little swig, not too much if you're driving, but do that and toast him, and I think you're going to get some interesting responses if you try that."
Well, you see, here's the other thing too: is my wife's aunt, her aunt is buried in this cemetery. We get her talking all the time.
Oh, really?
We go back by her headstone. We don't even get off the road there. It's just a small cemetery and everything. We can go back there in the very back of this place, and I'll go, "Hey, Annie, where you at?" And she'll come, "I'm here." She'll say that every time. She goes, and then you'll hear, she says this every time, where's Jenna? My wife.
Oh, so
wow.
she appreciates family coming out to see her, too.
Oh, yeah. And so, you know, she's kind of my caretaker out there. When I come out there, she kind of takes care of me. You know what I mean? She tells me all the time in my EVPs. I get them back home, and I'm just, like, dying. I'm laughing, you know. And my wife's sitting there, and she's listening to this. She goes, there's
hey,
my
John.
Aunt again.
Sal is getting ready to call it a night, so I'd just like to say love you, Sal, and I'll call you this week.
Yeah, Sal, we love you, man. Thanks for tuning in.
I would love for you guys to come up here and check this place out. You'll get a kick out of it. It's so
where,
so
where
small.
Are you at?
I'm in Des Moines, Iowa.
Des Moines,
ooh.
Iowa.
The Villisca Axe Murder House is out your way, buddy.
Yes, it is, and I've been there twice. I'll tell you another place that's really good, and I just got done doing it last night, is the Weaver House, General Weaver. He ran for president
I've heard of
in
that
the 1880s.
Place. Yeah.
Just went there last night. Got some pretty good EVPs out of that place.
You know, we may just have to make a road trip out to see you.
Yeah, I think you should, because we're doing a tea. Well, we got the Sherman Hill District. We're getting ready to do a tea house on the 25th and 26th of July. It's a two-nighter. We're inviting teams to come in and help out with this because it is a big house. So we're just saying, if you got the time to come in, come on in. You know, bring a couple of team members. We can use the help.
Coming to you live from General Weaver's mansion. It's GRI.
Yeah, you know what?
You know what? It's a nice place. I went in there and I got some really good stuff down in the basement and on the upstairs level.
Kind of a friendly place.
Very friendly. Actually, we got. I asked the when I was down there. This guy never smoked and never drank. Right.
Yeah.
I go, hey, General Weaver, is it all right if I smoke in the basement? And you hear this, no. Immediately. I'm like, okay, so I can't take a drink either. No. I mean, it was like real quick. And I said, does it suck that you actually lost the presidency twice? And,
oh my God.
And I said it just like that, and he said, yeah.
Well,
I mean,
appreciate
I just
your
said,
honesty.
I said, I read some of your policies, and you know, because I did my research on the guy, and I said, I read some of your policies. It's a little far out there, but it doesn't look like it couldn't be done. We have Obama in the office now. He's trying to do the same thing. And so you hear in the background laughter. It was hilarious. Grant and I were both just dying down there. We were just rolling. We were sitting there doing playback as we were going through this. We had two recorders going, so I was listening, he was listening, and we were going back and forth. Both of us were just rolling. We were just sitting there like,
what?
Yes, we finally got a guy that agrees with us, you know? So.
Well, that's an interesting concept, the idea of bringing them in on current events and seeing what they actually think. You know,
well,
I
imagine because
you know.
There's so many TVs in the house, I imagine these guys are just sitting there practically watching it. And we got his oldest son, Abraham, that's in there. We get him and the
hey,
two
John,
daughters.
CJ's calling it a night. So, hey, Siege, it's awfully nice to see you. I'm glad you're back, and I can't wait to catch your shows. We love you, girly.
Yeah, Christine. Hey, I need to get in contact with you, too, to schedule you in for sometime in May. So,
right.
I'll pop out on your website and just throw you a note out there to get some whenever you're ready. So just wanted you to know that. And we've been thinking about you, girl. So, yeah, thanks for coming by.
Thank you for stopping by the GRI chat page.
Well, I'll tell you what. I got some crazy stuff that you guys will get in this tea house if you guys get to come out. You'll get a kick out
I'll
of it.
I'll tell you what. I'll hop on a plane, a Southwest flight, and it sounds like something like we could do. Because hell, you know what the benefit of 24 years of working in aerospace is? You build up a whole lot of vacation time real quick. So
yeah.
I'm having to burn some of that off. So
well,
I think
what.
I might just do that.
I'll tell you what. You go to this tea house. You can be in that house for 5 minutes, and you'll get an EVP within the first 2 seconds you turn on your digital recorder.
I've been in places like that. I know what you mean, and it's just like nonstop in some of these places you'll hit. And it's just, and you just can't believe the amount you get. That's how it is out here. If you ever get the chance yourself to get out to Placerville, let me know because we'll take you someplace.
Oh, yeah,
and you're
definitely.
Just going to be just going. You'll be picking your jaw up off the floor, especially if we take you out to Coloma. You know,
oh, really?
It's just, oh yeah. I mean, routine for us with EVPs is minimum when we go out on a field case, 60. I'm not kidding you. Yeah.
Well, you'll
and
you'll
sometimes
love
way more.
Well, this tea house that we got, you know, those 70-page college rule notebooks.
Yeah.
We have a whole book full of them.
Yeah.
Just for
so
one
you
thing.
Get, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. And, what is your group?
I'm Des Moines Paranormal.
Des Moines
you can
Paranormal.
Look us up on. Yeah, we're on the free webs page. We're moving our actual .com over that way because they have a lot more storage and everything. We like the way they work, and it's a piece of cake to work there. But we're going to be moving that over here pretty soon. But you look up free webs and you go Des Moines Paranormal, it'll pull us right up. I'm actually putting in all the stuff from the tea house here pretty shortly. I've just got to put it in like 4 or 5 pages to get it in there. But
I know the problem with maintenance.
This tea house. I've got one good one. This is the best one. I said, I'm going to go outside. I'm going to leave here, you know, for a few minutes. I'll be back. And then you hear this. Okay, good. It was great. And then I said, are you mad that we're here? And he says, no, same guy. And then we go upstairs and we get this one woman. Now, this is what was creepy to my wife, is that we were listening to the playback on this. And you hear this woman upstairs. She's saying, get him off me. I'm burning. Get him off me.
Wow.
Right.
Whoa.
And it was a very long EVP. I mean, long. I mean, it was just, and we just set the recorder up in the bedroom. Now, this place, let me give you a little history on this place. You'll love this. In 1977, you can look this up. KCCI actually has the radio or TV station here. It has the interview of the man who burnt the apartment building down that was on that property. His name was Ron Vaverka. What they did is, and after the building burnt down, it was so bad that they just tore it down. Well, Drake University, which is the law school here, was getting ready to build a new stadium in the late 80s. So what they did is they moved moved two houses from that area. This one house that they moved ended up being on that property. It's a double lot, corner lot. Okay, and it's only 500 yards from the largest cemetery in Des Moines.
Huh.
So I imagine
you get
what they're getting
is there.
Yeah, and I think it's probably a waypoint for some, but there's a lot of them. Like we get a woman, a black woman, saying in there, and this is really weird. She says, "I'm sorry," all the time. Well, we finally found out the history of the place. We found out that this woman had a baby, and she was on the very top floor of this apartment building while it was on fire, and she tried to escape. She dropped her baby, and she saw that she dropped her baby and nobody was there to catch it. She ended up killing herself by going right after the baby.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God.
Then we get heavy footprints on the second floor. There was a woman that was actually killed in the apartment building on the second floor. She was in a walker with those leg straps they used to use, the old metal, you know, walking, you know, apparatuses and all that. She couldn't make it out of the building. She burned up in the hallway. There was one firefighter who was killed there, and then there was another gentleman. He was in his 80s that was burned in his own apartment. He was asleep during the whole thing.
Wow.
So
talk about activity.
We get children playing. We get a child apparition. We get a woman in Victorian dress in apparition. I saw her coming out of the bathroom after taking a leak. I didn't have my camera on me.
Do you know the anniversary date of this fire?
No, I do not, but I can find out pretty quick.
That would be something. Now, that brings up an interesting point that I'd like to touch on for a second, if I could.
Sure.
Being the sensitive that I am, a lot of times when I go to a place to do a reading or investigate or just generally find out what's going on, it's always good if you have a major event like that to know the anniversary date, because I have found in my paranormal travels that the best time to do an investigation at a place like that is on the anniversary of the major event. You will get a lot more activity if you do that. Because if it's residual, it crescendos up to the anniversary date, and then it sustains there, and you still get activity throughout the year, except it's not as intense as that date. So do some research, find out when that fire was, and then see if you can get into the place on that date.
Actually, my wife is really good friends with the lady and everything, so we can pretty
cool.
much go in any time that we want, because she actually does the ghost tours through her house and everything, and that's the reason why she put it up on her website and everything. And she had several ghost hunting teams in there, and they didn't get as much as we did. The last team that was in there was Die Park from Des Moines. They sucked. They only got 3 EVPs the whole time they were there. I go there, and I get 300 in one night. That's just, there's something just
yeah.
wrong with the equipment
yeah.
that they're using. There's got to be something wrong there. Not only that, but
technique,
I mean.
Technique and respect, you know. That's the thing that I'm noticing. When you're really nice to them and you try to identify with them, and you talk to them like they're, you know, you're not just demanding anything of them. You just go in and talk to them like they're family. And all of a sudden they just start opening up.
My wife is a sensitive. And you see, the weird thing about it is when I get around, like, say, Chris and Catherine Laps, or, say, for instance, around my wife and one of her friends, they'll get the feeling of who's there, and they'll know who's there and everything, and I'll get the smell of who's there. It's really weird. I get the sense of smell. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
what kind of stuff
feeling,
do you smell? I'd be curious. Do you smell like bread baking, or do you just smell like smoke, or can you identify with these smells?
Yeah,
anyway,
actually,
guys,
I can. It's really weird.
just to let you know, I was just sitting here, and we had our traditional double thump here in the studio. So
I heard that.
We've got some guests here in the studio with us. That
That's
are
Wayne
seeing,
and James.
Here. Yeah, Wayne and James. So, hi, guys. Anyway, sorry to interrupt there, but, you know, we had an actual paranormal event during the show.
Well, I'll tell you what. The smells that I get, this is really weird. When we go to that house, I smell the pickle guy. I smell the scotch every time I go out there. When we go there, this house, in the men's parlor, I smell, when Jenna's in there with me, she'll sit there and she'll go, he's here. But he's standing by the fireplace, and I'll say, and I'll start smelling. You know, I'll say, okay, and she'll say, well, lean over closer to me, and it'll probably help you out. So I lean over a little closer to her, you know, and I kind of draw for her a little bit, and I'll go, oh yeah, okay, yep, cigar smoke. You know, and she's
Do you have a notebook where you write down the time smelled it and what you smelled?
Yep, I sure do.
I think that's significant.
Oh, yeah, and I let them know what I smell when I'm in there, too, you know, because we don't kick out our homeowners. We never do, you know. And so the lady that owns the place, she's sitting there. She's like, okay, I can understand that. I've smelled that before, and nobody smokes in the house. And then I go, okay, well, let's go upstairs because I'm getting the smell of rose water. And she's there, and she goes, oh, really? That was her favorite perfume.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, and then the little old lady in the hallway, I said, I smell urine. Does she have bladder control problems? And she's like, yeah. From what I understand, the family told me that she couldn't make it to the bathroom all the time, so you smell urine, you know. And then when you go up the upstairs in the bathroom area, right around the bathroom, down to the back side of the kitchen and everything, you can smell, you know, that smelly sweat, you know, like somebody just reeking because they haven't had a bath in a long time. You can smell that as you're going down the backside of the staircase. And that's where the servants' quarters was.
You're right.
Huh.
So,
well, that
I mean,
neat.
It's really
so
weird.
You and your wife then play off each other, and that's really it just really works well.
Oh, yeah.
For what
it's
you're
just,
trying to do.
And the weird thing about it is like, say, for instance, we go out to a cemetery, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now this will floor you, okay? When Jen and I go out to a cemetery, okay, she'll sit there and she'll know who's there. She can pretty much pinpoint where they're at and everything. And then when I walk over to it, you know how that smell, you know, the smell like the moldy
yeah,
smell?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I get that moldy smell every time I go near somebody. Like he's been in the ground a little too long, you know what I mean? And it's just moist, that moisty, moldy, you know. My God, my clothes stink because they got mold on them. You know that kind of smell. You know, like if you leave laundry in a laundry basket that's wet, that kind of smell.
Yeah.
And that's what I get. And so when I take her, it's a blast. She gets a kick out of it. She'll start getting her headaches and starts getting real sick, and I have to send her outside. so she can get out of it all, you know. But she hasn't learned how to ground real well yet, but she's working on it. For me, I can just cut it off immediately, you know. But she's not real good at it yet. But we're working on it. But you know, but all of our other team members, we have a pregnant. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. How long have you been at this? Sounds like you guys are a pretty experienced team.
5 years. Me and my wife started out doing this by ourselves for 5 years, and we just ended up getting 4 more team members, and we're actually expanding into the Twin Cities area now. We have a team that's part of us. It's up in St. Paul. That's going to
cool.
be DMP MN. So it's going to be Des Moines Paranormal, Minnesota. So
well, I'll tell you what. I'm still working out some of our schedules for the next about 8 weeks. You guys feel like coming on and doing a show with us?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I can
okay.
get Grant and my wife in here. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, yeah. So if
well,
you ever get some of your best cases together, yeah, we got to do this because you guys
for
are
real,
you
we
guys
do this.
Great stuff.
Oh
yeah. Oh
yeah.
I mean, we want to hear some of those EVPs you've got.
Oh man, I got tons of those, man. I'll have to send you copies of them whenever I get a chance here. I'll have to put them. You know what? Better yet, I'll email you in here in the BTR and everything, and just email me your address and I'll just send you like a ton of stuff from this last
okay.
Haunt and everything. You guys can take a look at it and see what you think. We didn't
okay.
get much on
okay.
picture. But we got, if we can ever get our videotapes back from Carol Paranormal, we can probably get our get all of our apparition video back, too. We got apparition video as well. So
wow.
We got a lady looking at us from upstairs in the window. You can see her looking as a reflection in the window looking down at us. And then we have a child apparition that walks from the doorway to the main staircase and then stops at the main staircase.
Man, that area is active as heck from the sounds of it. We got
to
check this
out. Wait until you go to Southern Iowa. Southern Iowa, if you go to Villisca, let me tell you a little story about Southern Iowa. Did you know that many of the Indian wars and when Indian massacres happened in Southern Iowa?
No.
Oh, yeah. A lot of them. General Custer, when he come through here, he massacred
yeah.
like 2 tribes down in Southern Iowa. Massacred them. There was
seriously.
Seriously, and it's not written in history at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
He sent in his boys, and they went in there, and there was only like maybe 30, 40 people left of this tribe that was moved, and they just went in there and annihilated women, children, and men. Killed them all.
Oh, my God.
So he was doing this practice run up before he went out to, you know, out to Montana area.
Mm-hmm.
Did what he did at,
that's what it
sounds
yeah. like.
Yeah. Yeah, he was actually stationed here at Fort Des Moines when it was just an active fort, just an outpost and everything. He was stationed here. And then once he was released from here, his main goal was to annihilate any and all Indians that were in the area.
Damn!
And
so you get
finally,
a lot of activity.
Oh, yeah. Not only that, but we get the real bad ones, too. The real bad
yeah,
ones.
Yeah, that's violent activity. Yeah.
Very violent.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually been picked up and thrown 30 feet.
What?
What?
I've actually been picked up and thrown 30 feet from a kitchen to a living room in a house.
Yeah. You got hurt?
No, I didn't get hurt. I just got back up and I said, let's do that again. You know? And,
maybe you
and,
should walk around with a football helmet on. What do you think, huh?
No, you know what? I'm so used to it, it doesn't bother me. I've actually gotten the scratch marks. I've gotten bite marks. I've gotten burn marks. You know, it doesn't bother me at all because as soon as I leave a place like that, I usually call clergy in. That's the first thing I do. I'm like, okay, here's the information that I've got. I take it right straight to the diocese. I say, you need to help these people.
Yeah.
And so I've got clergy on call 24 hours a day.
Whoa.
So as long as well, you know, you have to.
Yeah.
Yep. You have to. Yeah. Custer was in Iowa. He actually he was stationed here at Fort Des Moines. It's in all the documentation from Fort Des Moines. He was only here for like about a month before they released him and sent him on his way.
Wow.
Yep. And the sad thing about it was is that the tribes that they were killing were Meskwaki tribes people, part of the Meskwaki tribe.
Pretty peace-loving
types.
Were they like a peace-loving bunch of people?
The Meskwakis, yes, they were actually. They were very peaceful. They weren't a warring tribe. They rarely ever got into a war. I mean, it was just like once in a great while, let's just say that. Now they actually are the only tribe left in Iowa.
Wow.
So, I mean, I would love to have you guys out here. You would have a ball at this place. I can take you to
I can smell an excursion even as we speak. I can smell it.
Well, you see, the reason why I say you want to spend the money going to Villisca, save your money. I got places I can take you to that'll creep the crap out of you quicker than anything. Villisca is
nothing. Well, that's a bar alley.
Dude, yeah, let's go.
Well, you see, you want to spend $300 a night for a team of five to go in there? Please, I can take you to places that are free. You don't have to spend any money.
That's how we work. We don't go to the, you know, we like to go to some of the name places, but most of the time we work our own stuff, and boy, it's worth it. So if you're willing to show us some of that, count me in.
You're right, man. I'll be right all over it.
Are you willing to stay on for a bit? We're going to take just a quick short break.
Definitely.
Yeah, so, okay, we're going to go ahead and do our fun song. And then our station ident.
Yay! Fun!
Look at
you
picking again. That was fun. I like that move. I like that song. I'll have to download that.
We'll make sure you get it. Let's see. We're gonna see. Poisoning pigeons in the park. Let me see. Here we go. I just found it. So we'll be back. This is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio, and we'll be back in about 4 to 5 minutes. Here we go.
Remember when you ran away and I got on my knees and begged you not to leave because I'd go berserk? Well, you left me anyhow, and then the days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha! You thought it was a joke, and so you laughed when I had said that losing you would make me flip my lid. Right? You know you laughed. I heard you laugh. You laughed and laughed, and then you left. But now you know I'm utterly mad. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, I cooked your food, I cleaned your house, and this is how you pay me back for all my kind, unselfish, loving deeds. Huh? Well, you just wait, they'll find you yet, and when they do, they'll put you in the ASPCA, you mangy mutt. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, to the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, to the funny farm.
Troops is filmed on location with the men of the Imperial Forces. All suspects are guilty, period. Otherwise, they wouldn't be suspect, would they?
This is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio coming to you live on blogtalkradio.com.
Okay, we're back, and we're talking about not only Haunted Nevada, but the show took a direction to Haunted Iowa with our good friends at Des Moines. I can't even say it today.
Des Moines.
Paranormal. And I believe his name is Mike. Is that correct?
Yep, that's
okay,
correct,
Mike.
Sir.
So we were talking about some of the cases in southern Iowa that you were telling us all about and some of the EVPs. And let's just go ahead and continue on this theme. I'm rather enjoying it. So,
okay, not a problem.
Yeah, so some of the cases that you've done, you've been thrown 30 feet. We kind of left at that. And what other cases are memorable around that area that you were
going
on?
Let's see. We've got, there's a couple of places that I'm trying to get us into right now, which is the Governor's Mansion, which is here on Grand Avenue. Now, we have stories from the security guards that work there. They're actually state troopers. And they won't go in the carriage house at night. They won't go.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the first thing they say all the time is, man, that place is creepy. And I was like, well, it's an old building. What'd you expect? It's the old carriage house. And the next thing they say to me is, dude, that ain't right to be actually going in there and getting what we're getting every night when we go in here. I'm like, well, what are you getting? And they're like, well, we see this dress that moves, you know, on its own.
Oh, boy. An actual physical dress?
It's in a glass case, so there's nothing that can get to it. Okay, it's the actual first lady's dress, so you can't even actually touch it. It's behind bulletproof glass, so you can't even touch it. And I said, well, you know, what is it doing? He says it flows, it sways, it moves on its own.
And there's no air vents or anything underneath. Nothing that would have, no air exchange system. It's pretty much sealed up.
It's sealed up because it's...
Is there any way that they would let you train a camera on it to catch the activity on film?
Well, we're talking to Brian over there, who is the caretaker of that the governor's mansion and everything. We're trying to talk to him to see and the governor's office to see if we can get in there. We're trying to right now. It's a little bit of a lengthy process because of after 9/11, you have to go through a bunch of stuff. So each investigator has to go through a background check. So we're working on that right now, but we got a hunt next weekend. We're going to the Air Lanes bowling alley. It's the home of the first speakeasy in town. So we're going there, and hopefully we'll get some stuff out of that. My wife used to live above the bowling alley in those apartments and everything that they supposedly had some things go on in there. You know, we're trying to get some of that, and then we got a few other places we're going to. We have an old asylum that's falling down that we're going to get access to here. It's up in Boone, Iowa. It's the old state hospital. We're going to go up there and try to get in there and do a one-nighter in there. There's no electricity, so we're going to have to take everything on battery up in there or put a generator outside, you know, and run wire all the way up in there, which I don't like doing because then you get crappy EVPs.
Have you ever hunted in an insane asylum before?
No, I'm ready to do this. I you know, I've been in houses where it's been really bad, so I'm ready for the insane asylums now. So,
well, let me tell you what, you know, you shield yourself well because when I went into you know, the Clovis Sanitarium down over by Fresno, you know, there were reputedly over 1,000 deaths there on the property.
Right.
And just you take one step in there, and it's if you're sensitive at all in any way, you'll feel it. And the EVPs that I've got one EVP of this guy just screaming at the top of his lungs, and another others just telling me, "I hate you, get out." You know, just every possible thing that could be told to you in every negative way possible, you'll probably have that happen to you. So just be, you know, you're pretty experienced. You know the drill. You know, really shield yourself well, and just watch yourself. Multiple investigators, the works.
Right. With those type of haunts, you know, with real, you know, crazy ones like that, I don't take Jen with me on that because it really affects her the worst. You know, so I leave her at home.
the headaches and
I the last thing I want her to have to do is have to go to the hospital. You know. And try to explain that one to a doctor, you know. You know, that's not a good thing. So I just usually leave her at home, you know. But when I go on my investigation, she'll get a kick out of this. I actually take a whole lot of holy relics with me. It's in one bag, and I keep it on my back the whole entire time. So if I need it, I can bring it out. You know, I always come prepared for that kind of stuff. I have a priest that gives me tons of holy water, and, you know, I have blessed crosses that I take with me, you know, just to be on the safe side. You know, I kind of protect my team. Everybody gets anointed before they go in. They go to get blessing before they go in. They get blessed when they come out. You know, we do the St. Michael's prayer before and after. You know, it's kind of like we take care of business before we get in there to start working with it, you know. And that's just the way we do things in our team. Our team, it's like a family. You know, I'm like the dad of the group, you know what I mean? I don't want to see any of my people get hurt, you know. I'll take the beating before they do, you know, and that's just the way it is.
But you literally have, from the sounds of it.
Yeah, Grant has taken his fair share, too, so, I mean, you know, it's because he's been with me since the beginning, and he's, you know, he's been my best friend. He's like my little brother, you know, and I'll tell you what, if there's anybody that I could absolutely say I'd jump in a foxhole with, that would be Grant. You know, he may have a personality defense post, but he's the greatest guy in the world, you know. He'll come to bat for you. Oh, yeah. And well, this is a guy who couldn't find Sherman Hill, and he lives 5 minutes from it. That was hilarious. He'll never live that down with us.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. I swear, I gave him directions on how to get there. And I was like, dude, it's right behind Methodist Hospital. And he's like, well, I know where Methodist is. He gets to Methodist. He goes, am I in Sherman Hill? I'm like, dude, you're like 2 minutes away from me.
Hello?
Yeah. I said, okay. I told him for Christmas I'm getting him a TomTom. That's it. I'm getting a GPS for his car.
I cannot imagine life without those now. It's just such a central part of our investigations. I mean, the places we go and try to find, it's the only way. So, yeah,
oh,
definitely have them do that. Matter of fact, you know, it's funny. I was, Kat, you were mentioning earlier on the Boot Hill thing where you were talking about trying to find some of these unknowns. And what, you know, something that occurred to me earlier with GPS was would be, and this is just a wish list if somebody would have actually invent this, is to, and you're seeing more and more of this in a lot of devices out there, to have a digital recorder with GPS capability built right in so that as you're walking around, you get an actual location of where you are at the time, you know, in conjunction with the audio, which would be just an enormous help because you could know exactly where you were and go right back to a spot that, you know, you got some EVP on or something. So, you know, hopefully we'll see some equipment and, you know, capabilities like that in the future. It just occurred to me tonight when you were talking, I went, wow, that would be cool. You know, and so hopefully if somebody out there has some connections to Sony or somebody, please, you know, build this for us. Anyway, I'm sorry to go on with that, but...
Oh, that's not wrong. Hey, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. I mean, that'd be
wonderful. It's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing it with cameras now. Digital cameras are coming out with that capability. But imagine, you know, it, say every 20 seconds you get a spot. It just records a mark of where you're at. You know, so as you play the recording, you see literally a map view, basically where you are walking at the time. You can actually see this whole thing, you know, play out. And it would just be just an awesome thing. It's got all kinds of potential for other uses, too. But
well, you know what? Another thing we need to see, too, is, like, say, for instance, the buildings that we go to, you know, because the cities usually have the city planning office. It's got all their maps online and everything of these houses and stuff. Why not have that built into it as well? So you know what level you're on, when you got it, you know, and where you're at GPS-wise, you know. So that'd be cool, too.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, we every so often we do a paranormal show of the future where we'll just dream up all these ideas and we'll just start throwing it out there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm going to remember that one for, you know, the next time we do that. And I'm going to probably do one of those about every 6 months. We'll just throw something together and see where things are at and, you know, if anything we've said comes to pass, you know. But with regard to, you know, some of the other things you've experienced and you know, actually, let's, you know, I'm going to take that back. It sounds like you guys are a fairly large team. You have a lot of cases that you do. So
yeah,
you're obviously hip deep
right
in
now,
evidence.
Actually.
What's that?
I said it's actually kind of starting to slow down on us right now. So, I mean, you know, we're getting kind of a break in here, you know, like it's not every weekend, but like this month it is practically. But next month I've barely got anything going on. So I'm taking that time to do training and everything. That's what I usually do on our down months is I usually do a lot of training, you know. But we keep adding members all the time. So, I mean, it's like we'll either get – we're actually up to 8 now. I'm going to start breaking them off in 2 teams. So, say, for instance, we can double schedule on the weekend. We can send one case and one to another case, and we can double up on those cases and stuff. Especially if we have ones out of state. I want to have an out-of-state team is what I want. I want them just to do technically out-of-state stuff. You know what I mean? So, say for instance, like in the Omaha area or the Minnesota area or Illinois somewhere or something like that, they can actually go and do those cases and kind of deal with them, you know, on that kind of basis. Because what my major goal is, and here's my major goal. I think it's a great idea. My wife loves it. Is that I'm just going to manage for a while, just sit on the back burners, give myself a little bit of a break, you know, kind of take some time off from it, and just manage from it, you know, and just kind of say, here's where I want you guys to go. We'll come back. We'll do the evidence together. You know, I want to see what you guys get, you know, that kind of thing. Just kind of take a back burner for a while, you know what I mean? Kind of get myself out of the spotlight.
I know the feeling. It's sometimes you can just get so deep into this, you need to kind of get back to just step back and see where you want to take it, the next step with it.
Right.
For example, I mean, the things I'm seeing out here, just with our group in particular, we have about four core members that I meet with regularly, and a couple, you know, about two meetings ago, we meet every month in Placerville, and one of them said, "What are you going to do with the team?" And looked at me, it was such a fundamental question, and I looked and I said, you know, I've been debating that, and what I really wanted to do was, I said, I've been analyzing all these EVPs we're getting, and so many of them are asking for help crossing over, and so many are happy, you know, looking for help. They keep asking for help, and I think it would be remiss for us not to try to deal with that. So we've actually taken the next steps to actually start looking at those kinds of requests coming in. And
right.
Do what we can to help. So, we're going to be going into that area soon. Right now, we've been kind of the same kind of thing. It's slowed down a bit for us because of illness and different things, the life issues that everybody's having. But I know where you're coming from, you know, so.
Oh, yeah. I get those requests all the time, too. And I just, you know, I'm not even, well, I can do it, but I don't like doing it. And a lot of people, they really get freaked out when you do this. You say minor rites of exorcism. Through a house, and that's one of the ways to deal with it, you know. A lot of people freak out about that, and I'm like, no, it's not like what you see on, you know, The Exorcist. It's nothing like that. What you're doing is you're just blessing the home. You're going through each part of the home, not giving them a place where they can be connected to. It's pretty much what you're trying to do. You're trying to help them move on, and that's what the basic minor rites of exorcism is. Anybody can do that. You don't have to be Catholic for it. You know, you can actually sit down and do that. Because basically all it is a prayer. You know. Now, if it's the real full-blown exorcism rites, you ain't got no clout. You couldn't do it, you know. But for just to get somebody moved on, you can use that. And I've been told by many a priest that it's okay to do that.
Okay, yeah, and that's kind of where we're coming from. We haven't had the instance, though, like what you've had, where we've run into, some really bad stuff going on. And I haven't been thrown yet. I've had ashtrays thrown at me, and I've been pushed and had a few things like that. But 30-foot, no, that's... But when that happens, you immediately... Do you like, pull your team back and you go, you know, back off that
golf? I tell all my team to get outside. That's the first thing I do. I say, get off the property, get outside. I'll meet you out there in a little bit.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you decide what to do from there, and then
I have to make the decision and bolt. I just tell them, I say, grab whatever you can. Don't even worry about packing it up. Just throw it in the van and go. You know, I'll see you here in a minute. And that's the reason why I'm like, you know, when I'm sitting there going through all this, I'll sit there. The one thing you'll notice about a bad haunt like that, and I'll tell you what you're going to be looking for. This is what you look for, okay? Number one is the smell. The smell will drop you. I mean, it's that bad. If you've ever smelled a rotten cow or a horse laying out in the hot sun that's been dead for a couple of weeks, that's the first smell you'll get. The second thing you'll get is you'll start feeling like when you go into a dark room, even though there's, a light outside, you know, outside the window, you can't even see your hand in front of your face. You can't. The whole room goes dark. So dark that you can't see. The third thing you need to look for, too, is your team members. Check them out. Keep tabs on them. Do it every 15 minutes. Everybody shows up the same place every 15 minutes.
And they go in twos, right?
Right, because these haunts like this, what they're like is they're like cows. Now, if you've got a cow on an electric fence, what do they do? They bump up that fence until they find a place that's got a weak spot, right?
Right.
Okay? And they'll look for it. And once they find the weak spot, they're going to use it. They're going to break through, and they're going to get through to you. You know what I mean? So what I tell everybody is I ask them, how are you feeling? Tell me right now how you feel, you know. And they will tell me, you know, they'll say, Mike, I feel like I want to kill you right now. Or, Mike, I feel like I'm depressed. Or, Mike, I feel like I just want to hurt somebody. You know, I say, all right, let's take a break. Let's go outside, get a break here. Let's go out here, go off the property and take a walk. We'll talk about it. And once they get off the property, they're fine. When they come back in, it gets three times worse.
So it's time to hang it up at that point, and that's when
you
decide clergy is the answer.
And I'm on the phone with the priest here in Des Moines. I'm like, I'm bringing you the evidence that we've got. Let me go over it real quick. I'm going to be there here probably the next 2 days. And I'll bring in the box of evidence for them, everything verbatim written down, take it to them. And the first thing they say is, okay, I'm going to go through the evidence real quick. Now, where's this place at? And then they call the homeowner and they say, do you want us to help you out? And if they say no, then they can't do anything. If they do, then they're down there the next following week. They're going through the whole thing.
Huh.
Wow.
It's the full-blown stuff. And I'm not allowed to go to that. So I can't see it. I'm not allowed to. So I just let it be after that. As long as I'm doing my job, getting them down there, hey, I'm okay with that. You know.
So you're like first, you know, that's kind of what I envision where we're going. First contact, you know, you assess it. If you see something that's beyond your capability, you call in the Army. You know.
That's right. I mean, you know, we're like the scouts.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, you know, a lot of homeowners that have this problem, they think moving out is going to be the key to the easy out. It's not like that. They will follow you. They don't care. If they're already connected with you in some way, shape, or form, they're going to follow you. And Doc John knows me really well. I actually anointed the whole team while I was out there in California when I went out there to do the drum barracks with them. And I anointed the whole team before we went in. And that was 20-some people. Everybody got it. So,
yeah.
I mean, I went in there with holy water and anointing oil, took it, you know, and just went that route with it because I, you know, not knowing this place, I didn't know what it was going to be like, and I didn't want to take the chances of somebody getting hurt, you know what I mean? And Doc knows me real well about that. So
far, what we've been doing has been hitting places we know that are not going to be like that, just getting our sea legs in place in our protocols and everything working the way we need to. But I know eventually that day is going to come, you know, where we hit something like this. And that's been my major issue is, you know, I think the thing that we need to be doing is exactly what you're up to is the anointing oil, holy water, you know, and have some of that with you.
Yep.
We've been doing the, you know, basically centering ourselves and grounding ourselves before we go in, you know, just even on a known haunt, and just to be sure. But I'm going to take this as sound advice.
Yeah.
You got my attention.
And if you're not, and you know, if your team has any Christianity in their background or anything like that, my suggestion to you too is if you actually go to one of these haunts is to go to the church the day before and the day after. Hit that because you don't want to bring anything home with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's just the way I do things. I tell my team, you're hitting the church before we head home. You know, and because I do my stuff on Saturday nights, so I know that Friday they can hit Friday Mass with me and they can go Saturday morning or Sunday morning and they can get right in there, you know, and get it taken care of. And that's just the way I do things. It's just I don't want them taking anything home with them. I'm not bringing it home with me either. You know what I mean? So, you know. And that's the way my wife has made it work for 5 years. She says, my butt ain't hitting the door until I hit the church. So.
Yeah, it's just like going and washing yourself. So, okay.
Pretty much.
We got that down.
Yeah, and that's the way we do it. You know, it's not that our team is inadequate about their, you know, their faith or anything. It's just I like to take the extra measure. You know what I mean? Take it. My wife knows me. Like when I get ready to go pack on a trip, I take everything with me, including first aid kit. You know, it's just I'm always overprotective, you know, of my team and everything, and all of them know that too. You know, and you know, we have a pregnant girl that's on our team, and I told her, I said, you're not to go upstairs or downstairs. You're to stay on the main level. I don't want you dropping child while we're here. And she's 8 months pregnant, for crying out loud. I'm not going to have her, you know, walking up and downstairs when that kid's buried to come out the other end anyways. You know, that's not cool, you know. And like when we get into high EMF situations, I make her sit out in the car. And the only reason why is because in a fetus, you know, or in the child that's being born and everything, you know, high EMF causes a lot of problems with that. And Harvard did a study on it not too long ago saying that high EMF can cause a lot of problems. So, and that's when we get to our baseline, and as soon as I find one spike, she's out. You know, until that kid's born, she's out. So,
yeah, how about
she may not like it.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was saying, she may not like it, but then she'll get over it. You know, it's not like it's going to be our last one, so. But go ahead.
What about your evidence analysis? I mean, when you do get, you know, for example, you go out and you do, you know, what you know, collect evidence, and I'm sure you're doing lots of video, lots of EVP, that kind of thing. How are you guys, dealing with all that?
Actually, what we do is when we get together and we do all of our, going over all of our evidence, we do it as a team. We come over to my house. I've got two computers set up, and then we have a couple laptops that people bring in and everything. I'll set two people on EVPs, two people on video, and then one person on just doing pictures, you know, going through the pictures and everything, double-checking that. Then we'll switch off every hour so that everybody's got fresh eyes on it, you know. And that's the way I want to do it. And, you know, I've always done it that way. And then when we go back to do the reveal, it's usually me and Grant that goes because we're the two lead investigators. We go back and deal with it. And I do the talking, Grant does the showing. So it works out real well. Like I said, he's not got the personality for it, and that's the reason why I got into it and into doing this. And so most of the time the homeowners are happy with what they get. You know, they're like, well, that explains a lot of things, you know, and then, or you'll get them like, well, what do we do? How do we get rid of them? Do we need to move? You know, I'm like, well, don't move just because of them. You take ownership of your own house, you know. So that's what I usually tell them.
Do you get the ones who really wanted it to be haunted, and you walk in and it's pretty easy to debunk, and you get in there and
yes,
we actually had a guy rig up a house.
Oh, the best ones are the ones that, like, this bar owner, he wanted to rig up the place. That was the best. I was just like, okay, dude. And I knew who he was, and I knew what he was going to do. I've known him for years, and I was just waiting on it. And so we go to this bar. It's in downtown Des Moines, and he's got stuff rigged up in the ceilings. He actually spent thousands of dollars to do this. Okay? We traced down a wire to this old antique radio that he had actually put an amplifier in. And said it's so low that you could barely hear it, but we traced it down with a tri-field meter. We found that. let's see. It's some of the stupidest things I've ever seen. I mean, you know, you're just like, okay, so he wants to make the chandeliers move. Oh, I see. He's using beer pistons, you know, things like that, you know, the
oh
beer
my
tap pistons.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it was just
how did he react when you...
Oh, I just said, well, thank you for your time, for letting us come in here. And we started laughing as we walked out the door. I mean, me and Grant were just dying. So we had to hurry up and get outside so we can just bust up, you know. we got out there. And so we get back to the house. I said, you really want to go through some of this stuff? And he goes, yeah, might as well anyways. And so we did. We got a couple of good EVPs out of the place. Don't get us wrong. And it wasn't because of that stuff, because we turned it off when we found it. And turned off all the compressor air lines and everything else so that we didn't get the shaking of the chandeliers and stuff like this guy wanted.
Oh, God.
And so we figured out where all the lining was going to. It was funny. And so we did get a couple of good EVPs out of there, but other than that, not really much of anything to write home about. But the best part was is when we went back and did the reveal with him, I said, you know what you were doing, right? And he goes, yeah. And I said, you thought you were going to get on TV with this or something? I said, we're not ghost hunters, dude. I said, we're the real thing. I said, we're not on Sci-Fi Channel. We're not on anything else. You know, it's a great little gimmick if you want to use it. I said, but I will put on my website that it's a hoax. And I said, then you're going to be trying to say he should, he said, she said thing. Plus, you signed an agreement with us saying that, you know, whatever we find, we're, you know, we're capable of putting that on the web and everything without your permission. And I said, and the sad thing about it is once we do, if we do do this, I said, then it's going to ruin your business. I said, do you really want that? And he said, no. And I just said, well, my suggestion is if you want to say it's a gimmick, then say it's a gimmick. Don't say it's a real hunt because I've already debunked it.
Right.
Oh, my God.
And the best part about it is the guy actually said, well, thank you for your time and made a $100 donation after that to our group. So we were kind of happy with that. I mean, you know, just to kind of call it out. But, I mean, you know, but seriously, I mean, I wasn't trying to make the guy out to be a liar. It was just, I was just saying, you know, hey, it was a great gimmick, you know, and all. Thank you for your time and everything. But we can't say this is haunted because we won't, you know. It's one of those things.
You know, did you ever think that maybe as a training aid to detect such things that you could go back there with your team, your new team members, and take them back there and say, this is what you look for?
Actually, I've got a little place rigged up to where we can do that.
Yeah, it just occurred to me. I'm like, oh, that guy could actually put all the thousands of dollars to good use for you, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get such a kick out of it, too, man. I'm just like, this is nuts, man. Why are you like this? You know, and you have to sit there and you have to think about it, and you're like, people, I swear, you know, give us a break, you know, that kind of thing. But,
well, the thing that I never could understand is, you know, it's so easy for us to go out and get EVPs and you know, collect evidence. I mean, you know, I just don't understand why people would be motivated by that when they see, you know, that this stuff is out there. You know, it's just so easy to get. So why would he put all that money in it? And he can't even take it off on his taxes. Oh, geez.
No, I know. And the best part about it was this guy, he has like four or five bars down here. You know, everybody kept saying, oh, man, the chandelier shake whenever you're trying to close down and everything. Well, yeah, it's because your boss is up there screwing around with his little air hose, you know. And a bunch of people thought he was for real. And then when they found out that he was just BSing them, a lot of them quit on him. He lost a lot of his business because of that.
Wow.
I mean, people kept calling us and emailing us. I was like, talk to your boss. Ask him what it's all about. Don't call us, you know. We don't care. We know the guy, you know. We just don't care anymore. But then we get some of the cases where you get so much high EMF that it actually does things. You know, the house, the entities can actually pull off of that, you know. And then, like last night, we went to the Weaver house. I think our meter probably didn't peg below a 10 the whole night.
Wow.
Anywhere in the house, 10. Was the main base reading. We turned down as far as we could go. We were still getting a 10. We could stand 5 feet away from the power box, and we were reading probably right around a 7.
And you were getting manifestations on top of that, right?
Yeah, right on top of it all. And we could actually set the tri-field meter on the ground, on dirt, and we were still getting a ton of EMF.
Well, tell you what, we're coming up on the last 2 minutes of the show, so I'd love to talk more there, Mike, about all this, but we're going to have to start closing it down.
Yeah, not a problem. Actually, I got to get into bed myself, so.
Yeah, what I'd like to do, though, is, if you could shoot us an email,
mm-hmm.
Just, are you logged in on Blog Talk? You got your own account on that, so you can just message
us?
Yeah,
I do. Yeah, I do.
Okay,
in the morning, so I'm usually up at 8:30 doing my show at 8:30 in the morning, so.
Oh, you have your own show here?
No, yeah, I sure do.
Okay, well, we'll look for a message from you, and then we'll go ahead and make some arrangements. So we just want to thank you very, very much for coming on and spending a good hour with us here.
Yeah, I can't wait to see you guys out here. It'd be kind of fun to have some other groups out here other than Die Pardon here in Des Moines. So.
Yeah, hey, thanks for calling in, Mike. That's fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, you guys have a good night now. I want to go on and get off here, so you go on and finish you guys' show up and everything. I think I just took all the steam off of you guys. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that.
Oh, no problem. Okay.
All right. Well, you guys have a good night now.
You too.
Take care.
Yep.
Okay. We got less than a minute left, so I'm just going to look real fast here, and I'll do the shout-out just real quick. We got Western Nevada Paranormal. We got Des Moines Paranormal, Haunted Hunters. Carla's there. Hello, Carla. We got Paranormal Poison. Oh, goodness gracious, Disgruntled Dan is here. Crystal Embers, Brian, Doc John, and some guy named GRA Paranormal and Kat. So we wanted to thank everybody for being here with us, and it was a really good show, kind of a not the norm for us, a Sunday evening show. We'll probably do this every so often. And so, Miss Kat, I wanted to thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, and we'll see you guys next Saturday for another edition of Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. And I'm going to play one last thing, Kat.
What am I doing here? Please, Mr. Custer, I don't want to go.
Oh, my God.
Mr. Custer, please don't make me go.
You're going anyways, fat boy. I don't care.
Them bushes out there, they're moving. There's an Indian behind everyone.
The bushes are moving? Oh, my God.
Hey, Mr. Custer, you mind if I be excused the rest of the afternoon? Hey, Charlie, duck your head.
Oh, you lay a bit late on that one, Charlie.
They were sure of victory, the men of the 7th Cavalry, as they rode on.
La la la.
And from the rear a voice was heard, that same great voice with a trembling word, rang loud and clear. What am I doing here? Please, Mr. Custer, I don't want to go. Please don't make me go. There's a redskin waiting out there, fixing to take my hair. A coward I've been told, 'cause I don't want to wind up dead or fall. Please, Mr. Custer, I don't want to go.
I don't care.
No. I wonder what the Indian word for friend is. Say, friend. Kimasabi, I tell you. Kimasabi. Hey, out there. Kimasabi. Well, that isn't it.
That isn't it.
Running around like a bunch of wild Indians.
Good Lord.
No, this ain't no time for joking.
That's
okay,
hella
hey.
Funny.
That was great. I got we got going a little longer than we had planned, but I really was glad he called in. I think it took the show in a new direction, but it was really good to hear from them. I'd like to actually do that, head out there and take a look at that. Well, I'll really look over the schedule and see what I can pull out of my hat. I don't know.
I am on my way.
Yeah, but that would be worth you know, grabbing a plane and, you know, grab a car and head out there and take
for
a...
me. Oh yeah, with what I can do, for real.
Yeah. So and then only that gentleman, he's pretty experienced. It was really nice to hear from somebody who's been around a while and, you know, doing this. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So. That said, I've got family I got to go deal with here tonight with this whole thing going on here. And so I'm going to go ahead and bundle it up. I will say this for those of who are listening on the archive edition here. I believe we have shock radio you know, the folks from Shock coming in next week. I think we're going to be doing a show with them.
My friends.
Yeah, so can you, before we get off, let's talk about them. Can you give a short synopsis about what they're, who they are and all about what we're going to talk about on that show?
Yeah, it's a group that I affiliate with as far as remote viewing. I do a lot of remote viewing for them. Their call sign is SHOK, S-H-O-K. That would be Spirit Hunters of Knoxville. They've been around for a couple of years, and I've been with them about a year and a half. John and Andrea Jameson run a good crew. They have a lot of activity out there in Tennessee, and they travel to other states to do investigations. They have a pretty large group. They're all get along pretty well. They're all really good friends. They do potlucks, and they're a pretty tight team. I talk to Andrea on a daily basis, and when they go on investigations, they take me with them. She will call me via telephone, and I look forward to meeting the team in person. They're a couple of dedicated paranormal investigators, and they have some really interesting stuff that they'd like to bring to the table, that is GRI Paranormal Radio Show. So look forward to having them on.
Okay. Well, that said, we had a really good time tonight, and despite the technical issues and some of the little gotchas that got to us, I think it turned out pretty good. So,
you know, before you go, I have one thing that I'd like to run by you.
Okay.
We were talking last night about, just goofing around about throwing drop recorders into that window and stuff. And I was curious what you think of this.
Okay.
You can get webcams that you can remotely hook up to your laptop.
Yeah.
And they are wireless. And you can throw a couple of those up there and pad them with some foam rubber around the little ball, and not the lens, but so that if you throw it up there, it doesn't break.
Yeah, it's just the thing that I'm looking at is I was thinking about it this morning. I was having breakfast and popped outside for a little while and was looking at our back lawn, and I was thinking, how would I practice throwing, something like that all that distance, and what would be the scenarios most likely that I would use it? And so I'm starting to try to think of writing up a procedure, essentially, to look at, here's the technology. For example, the microphone thing is, you could get those little condenser mics that are, super cheap. Throw a cheap speaker wire on them, and you've got an instant long extension wire for a mic that you can just plug into your computer, and you've got an instant capability. And you could actually rip the damn thing right out of the, if you had to, you could just rip it out and you're done. You haven't lost much. So that's one of those, and the other would be the video. Is the ability to get video in a place. And I saw a demonstration of this, of all places, on Weaponology. It was on cable TV. And evidently the Swiss have been very active in this area. They basically have these devices they throw in from a distance that have a weighted ball. And what this ball, they'll throw it in, and when it lands into wherever they're going to put it, it rolls along, and all of a sudden it will open up and look around, and it basically will reorient itself, and then it'll scan around and look, get a complete 360 video shot of what's around it, and it has a microphone on it too. And it, not only that, it can actually retract that, and it has some mechanism of rolling itself around. So, it was really interesting to see, but I looked at it and thought, well, a cheap version of that would be something that would just be the weighted ball. So you'd throw it in and it would land wherever, and then it would always land right side up. And then you could, if you had the ability then to, have the video come on remotely somehow, you've got that capability. But there's so many issues with that. I mean, the ability to orient which direction the camera's pointing, that's a big one. What if you land up against a wall? Well, you just blew that, right out of the water. unless you have some means of pulling on it with a cable. I think that'd be kind of the tough part. You know, you'd have to actually practice that and see the feasibility. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, living up here on the third floor, I can open up my bedroom window and take the screen off and practice throwing things up into my bedroom window because it's about the same distance.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is pick a – if you were going to try something like this out and develop a capability that you don't have right now for investigative work, you know, sit down and think about the types of places you've been and the cases you've been on and what – yeah, what capabilities you really want that you don't have now that you can address that way. And if you can come up with a place to practice that, try it, you know, and you'll find out what really works and what doesn't. So part of this is research and development, you know, and to see what actually is going to, you know, be feasible.
Well, I've got some friends that own some warehouses in Seattle, and I can go down there and practice all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to take the microphone idea and see what I can do with it. I've got you know all kinds of cable and stuff here and all kinds of I've got a whole box full of those condenser mics that are not doing anything for me. So I'm going to solder a few of those together and put like a 60 foot, you know, put together like a few 60 footers and just have some means of being able to. Have those in like an enclosed case with a weight on the end, and then I can fire it from like a wrist rocket or something. I'm thinking a wrist rocket might be the best way, and to work out how to do that. So I'm going to play around with that. I've got all that space here on the back, you know, behind our garden area. It's all dried out now, so I'm going to try, you know, getting my aim good with those, and then to see, you know, how well is that going to work, and see what we pick up. As a technique out of it. And then if it turns out to be something, document it and we'll throw it on the GRI site. And the same with your whatever you come up with. You know, we can have it. And then not only that, we each try with the other one and throw it around the rest of our team too. You know, have everybody check it out. So I think there's some neat stuff we're going to be able to pull off. But what's funny is we're coming up with ideas that a lot of these senior investigators haven't, you know, like that whole idea of, you know, this – taking the digital recorders for the future and embedding a GPS capability in them. So you can actually monitor where you've been, which would be awesome, you know. So, and then he kind of fed off of that and came up with the elevation idea and all that, you know, when we were talking to Mike. So that's it. Anyway, I'm tired and been a long day. So I've got to go to work in the morning and I'll get in touch with you and talk some more about shock so we're ready for that for the coming Saturday, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Well, hey, had a great time.
I always have a great time doing this.
Okay.
I hope I got enough in about the old Washoe Club and Boot Hill and...
Yeah, you know what? I'd like to just take when we do the next show and on the first half hour, we'll just, if you keep the notes, we'll just continue kind of an abbreviated version of that so we can take whatever else you had and just, you know, continue forward with that a little bit. And I'll have a couple of pieces of evidence, you know, to share. Just, we'll probably change the format slightly to fit that all in. So, and then we'll have our friends from Shock in. So I'd like to finish off, just kind of finish that show off because we kind of diverted away from it, you know, when we went with Des Moines. So.
Well, I'm going to send you these two links that I was just studying because they're so interesting. So I'm just going to shoot them off to you here real quick so that you can see these incredible pictures that I'm looking at. I'd also like to send you this incredible site that I found with all these names for Boot Hill. If we're going to do Boot Hill, it would certainly be to our advantage to copy this this page off and just walk around and read these names off and see what kind of EVPs you get. Like, hey, Patrick, what kind of stuff do you like? Or, hey, John, how you doing? Or there's Margarita and... M. McAllister, and it says on here how they died.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm looking at late May for a possible expedition out there. So I'll talk with some of the other group and see what we can pull out of our hats as far as a some time off to go do that. Probably it'll end up being on or near a weekend, you know, so we can, and I'd like to get 3 days in if possible. That would really work out well as a pretty full-blown investigation. And then if we could all do that, I think that would really just be a fun deal to do. The Shanley, you know, trying to do Des Moines, I mean, I have to really look and squeeze in how the heck we're going to pull this off. So because what we'd have to do, I kind of personally think that the Des Moines thing we could get in August after the Shanley.
How close is Iowa to New York?
It would be about like Utah, California to Utah. I mean, that's a fair piece, you know, 700 miles.
Okay.
Maybe just as a guess. It's a you know, unless you did a kind of a single trip, you did you'd have to abbreviate one, you know, you, I mean, you know what I'm saying, you'd have to abbreviate the other trip to accommodate two, you know, if you had vacation time and stuff. So I personally think if we were to you know, space it evenly out every 2 months, you know, do something like that, you know, late May, it's early June, then coming almost into August, Shanley, and then after that, maybe September, you'd be looking at Des Moines. And that would be a pretty full year.
Yeah, well, you know, like I say, I do remote viewing for people, and that's all I seem to do. And I get to hear about these fantastic investigations that I help with my mind, and it's like, you know, every once in a while, yeah, I really kind of like to go to these investigations and be there, meet people that I talk to on the phone all the time with, and stuff like that, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what. Well, let's. The Gold Hill is a for sure thing, you know. So I'm going to be kind of approaching the team with that on next weekend. We're going to be. Or not next weekend, but what is it? May. I had it for the third week of May, but I'm going to have to probably up the team meeting, and then get everybody together and say, "Hey, we're looking at doing this. Can you get some time? Or if you can't, then whatever. But I'll get a date. We'll figure out a date so that we can get everybody out and get you on a plane and get you out here, and then everybody caravan out and you know, spend the time." And I definitely want to hit the miner's cabin. Want to grab rooms 4 and 5 too, and that way we got three areas of known haunt going on, and you know, turn our team loose and go for it. And it's a comparatively safe place. I mean, I don't think we're going to have any violent anything. It's just mostly human spirits, but I think it'll be kind of a lot of fun. And hit the Washoe Club and just not only that, play, have a good time.
Yeah, I need to start doing that. I've been to some investigations, but I just kind of go by myself, you know, because I'm not trying to sound whiny, but, you know, I love helping people with what I can do, but every once in a while, I really like to get on a plane and go to some of these places and go, oh.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll do it. Just let me look into the best times, and I got to see what times I can get off work to kind of fit it in. And I'll try to do it as close to a weekend as I can, so it makes it easy for everybody. And then get the reservations in and see if we can get a group rate and all that. So that said, I'm gonna scat, Miss Cat, and
okay.
Shut this lab down and head on in and check on my mom, so, because she was pretty upset. So,
well, I
okay.
hope everything's okay, man.
Yeah, I haven't heard the phone ring, so was watching for that, and it hasn't. So it looks like hopefully no news right now is good news. So
did he have a full embolism?
Yeah, his arm actually started waving wildly on its own, and his son Joe grabbed him, and they threw him and Aunt Millie in the truck and got him down the plains. And it's just been this actually started last night, and we just found out about it this afternoon. Mm. So it's been a kind of everything came to a stop. So I was debating even having the show, but my mother said, there's nothing we can do, so just have to wait. So anyway, I left the phone line open, and no mixer tonight, but we managed to make the show anyway. So, okay.
That sounds like a plan, man.
Okay, well, I'm going to head out.
I sent you those links just in case you ever want to take a look at them. It's pretty fascinating.
Okay, well, I'm going to go up and grab some coffee, check on Mom, and then I'm going to head down to my place, and I'll pop on the laptop and take a look around. So, and
right.
I'll shoot you a mail. So, okay?
All right.
Okay, well, this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio shutting off its extended show. And thank everybody for coming aboard to listen to us. And we really value you guys. It was a record night tonight on the chat room. We had 14 people in. And just to let you know, Kat, we've had well over 1,000 listeners now for the metrics. I'll have to pull up the exact numbers for you. But we're definitely building right on up there. So just want to thank you for being part of it.
I have 74 friends and 658 hits on my personal page.
All right. Well,
yeah.
I've got a few myself, so I haven't counted that many, but they seem to like us. So with that said, let's go ahead and sign it off, and I'll get on the email, and we'll check on some of the stuff we got coming up.
Yay!
Okay. See you later.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.